haircut today, so I feel like a new person. I guess this is an Apple product launch today too, huh? Have you got anything in the mail today? No, it's tomorrow.
You always throw me when we do the time travel of recording them from the night before.
No, I was just honestly mistaken for Friday. We're recording on Thursday.
Tomorrow's Friday.
It'll come out on Friday.
So you're time traveling in your head to tomorrow. But
yeah.
Zach, the AirTags are in the mail. I will be receiving one.
Okay. Because I was reading this. It's Zach buys an AirTag 4-pack. So that's...
I mean, last week we discussed this, and you said that you were going to leisurely walk into an Apple store at some point in the future and probably pick one up.
Yeah.
And then on like Monday, you text me saying, so I bought an AirTag. Oh, but they didn't have singles, so I bought a 4-pack.
Yeah. No, I canceled that. I did.
Okay, you canceled it again.
Yeah. No, I saw it hit my bank account and I was like, that's $100-something. I was like, oh yeah, that impulse purchase from Friday morning because everyone else was doing it. I went in and canceled it. I was like, I really don't know what I'm going to use these for besides, you know, what you would use it for to test it out, and you've got it covered. So I don't have to. And again, like I back to that well thought out plan before, when they're just available in a store and I just happen to see one, you know, okay, I'll get one. I'll buy it, but I canceled because it wasn't
like I would generally
in the plan.
I think it's hard to find a use for a 4-pack, honestly. Like, unless you're buying them and then giving to your whole family, and then you're essentially giving, you know, like one each.
I really thought about the keychain thing because, like, you know, that's pretty useful. And then backpack, like, I could find a way, I think. But then I was like, I don't really want to have one more thing on my keychain, even if it's to find it when it gets lost. And just, you know, I'm sure I'll regret it one day. But I've lived 30 years without AirTags, so I'm going to try to keep doing that.
Yeah, like, keys are like the number one thing I can think of, and then it starts getting more like tenuous, really. Like, it's like I want to get one because I think it'd be cool to try out, and you know, there's going to be the novelty factor of throwing my keys somewhere in the house and doing the Easter egg hunt with, you know, precision finding, right? Be like, sure. Oh, that's cool, whatever.
Yeah.
But in terms of like full time practicality, I guess it's keys in the case that I do lose them, and I mean, like. And ultimately, at the end of the day, right, if you, the next time you lose something, you'll be like, oh, I better buy an AirTag for the next time I lose it, right? So you can probably slowly accumulate them over time.
I mean, for 30 just bucks, there's no way.
Off the top, I'm not interested in four.
Yeah, for 30 bucks, I mean, it's the easiest, just try something new from Apple, purchase you can make. Because it's just,
yeah, then you have to spend like $15 on a bit of plastic.
Yeah. I mean, I could literally put it inside of my motorcycle as a little storage compartment. And then, you know, I don't think it's ever going to get... I mean, I think the more likely scenario there would be like, where did I park? Or where did I park last night? You know, where did I end up? And you know, I'll let you know when those things happen. But
yeah, because I've considered like putting one in my wallet and just putting it in the change pocket where the coins go.
I think
it's basically just...
Like, I'm a thin wallet person. I think it's kind of thick for that.
Yeah, my wallet's a bit thicker, so I guess it would fit. But I am a bit concerned that if it's fully enclosed, that the signal is going to be lower. Like
you could put it in the actual change pocket of all your jeans.
One AirTag per pair of jeans.
Yeah,
yeah. I really lose my jeans. You know, they
or
just disappear,
you know,
off of
me. We talked about this before a number of times. You know, how you used to put the Nike Plus chip in your shoe to track running with your iPod. You could put an AirTag in each shoe.
You could indeed.
You could do that.
But seriously, I am worried that if you put like a, say if you had a backpack and you just wanted to put the AirTag in your backpack rather than attached out of it, because all Apple sell are like the luggage tag equivalents, right, where it would be on the outside. I think part of that and the fact that their accessories all make sure the main part of the logo shown is for radio frequency reasons, because if you cover it up too much, maybe the range is really low and it's not actually going to be serving the function of what you need it to do. So that's something to try when I actually get one, right? And
yeah,
if I do put it in the wallet and it seems okay anyway, maybe I'll get a second one for the wallet or something.
Mm-hmm. yeah So AirTags, I guess they're, you know, I don't know that they're going to be like in stores near me tomorrow, but you know, I'm sure I'll pick up one. But I did cancel the pre-order though.
We'll talk about it next week anyway.
Yeah, part of what it was is I made not one, but two purchases over the last week. It's, you know how like when this happens a lot, when I buy like the cheapest smallest iPad Pro size, and then I add cellular, and then I add the bigger screen, then I add more storage, and it ends up being like 5 returns and 6 purchases.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there used to be a name for that law. But I did that with a motorcycle this past week where I bought a new motorcycle. I was going in for one, and then I could afford another that was a much bigger upgrade. And then I owned it for a few days. And then I was in another store another day doing a test ride of the Livewire, as I was talking about last week. And they made me an offer that was terrible. And then they made me an offer that was really good to buy the one I just bought for full price and then give me a really good deal on the Livewire itself. So, I did the same thing I do with like iPads, but on motorcycles on a much higher level. And so that inspired me to maybe I shouldn't be spending $100 on AirTags, that I'm not so sure what I'm going to do with them. And that was most of that reasoning. And then by nature of needing to charge the bike now, I'm house shopping. So, which is even more of like, don't buy just anything because you can, including a motorcycle, but a new motorcycle. But, alas, here we are. What else do we have?
Expensive things on your shopping list.
Yeah. Do you think anybody heard last week's episode, by the way?
Yeah, we probably should have. I guess we have to apologize for Apple being stupid.
So. I don't know. I mean, if you don't, it's frustrating because I like Apple's podcast app. It's what I listen to podcast mm-hmm. with because it's on the Mac without compromise. It's on the Apple Watch with streaming. Obviously, the iPhone and with proper Siri support without having to request, you know, a certain app. On CarPlay with good updates every year. So I like the Apple podcast app versus third-party apps for podcasting. But I guess if you use a third-party app, you were okay for the most part. And then if you use Apple's podcast app, you may or may not have gotten our episode last week. Maybe you won't get this one. I don't know. But Apple podcast, it's frustrating because that's where they're putting, you know, their subscription for more content. And so, you know, ideally I'm an actual podcast app user. We'd encourage people to use that app for the stuff that could come in the future. But in this case, if you use that app, you might not hear the episodes lately.
Yeah, I think it is fixed now. I mean, if you're listening to this episode, then we should be Gucci. But basically, the way that the podcast app fetches its feeds in iOS 14.5 is different how it fetched it before. So like before iOS 14.5, the podcast app would individually contact the RSS feed of everyone that you're subscribed to and just download the feeds directly. Whereas what it does on 14.5 and later is it contacts like an Apple API, and it's the Apple backend that tells the app whether there's new episodes or not that it needs to fetch.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and what happened was, and Apple's backend had basically been misbehaving in 15 different ways since last Monday when they announced the subscription stuff and Podcast Connect and, you know, that whole initiative, and people weren't being able to get in logged in, episodes weren't fetching for a while last week. Our podcast was completely disappeared from the podcast search. Like, you couldn't find it at all. They fixed that. But when they fixed that, none of our episodes were updating, like none for daily. You'd release daily episodes. And the last one it showed rooms from Wednesday. Ours only showed the event preview episode, not actually our event episode. And it was, you know, really annoying because everyone's like, you know, all these other sites have done their podcasts. They're out there. Where's an artifact? It's like, is there? You just need a different application. And we tried all sorts of things to try and like kick it into action, but nothing worked. We just had to wait for Apple to fix it. But does seem like it is fixed now, but it's not a great start to their renewed initiative for, you know, Apple Podcasts.
Yeah. When you move things around, you know, some things break sometimes. And it's the first big update to the podcast app in a long time, and back end as well, I guess, even though it's.
And I know like, there are some, like, ignoring the server issues, which hopefully will get, you know, fully resolved very soon if they're not already resolved. There are some people who are upset with iOS 14.5's, like, the redesign to the podcast app because they've changed quite a lot of how it works. And you used to have to, like, delete the shows from your playlists or from your show pages, like, from your subscriptions when you were done with them if you wanted to, like, clear out the list. And what they've done in 14.5 is simplified the app so you don't have that control anymore. It just shows you the episodes in, you know, most recent or oldest order, depending on which, yeah. You know, you can say most recent, start from most recent or start from the oldest, right? And
yeah.
And then the episodes just show up in the list. You tap them, they play, they mark as played, and the new episodes download. So they've kind of stripped away some of the weird, like, not weird, but like more power user complexity of the application. And of course, if you were somebody who used those features, now you're really mad because they're not available anymore inside the app. But personally, and this is going to be very subjective, right? But personally, I never used any of that stuff. I just wanted like subscribe to the shows that I like. Episodes come in, I listen to the episodes, and then when they're marked as played, they get automatically deleted. And the new podcast app UI, in my opinion, achieves that core functionality very well. And I think that is what most people want to do with a podcast app. And that's why most people are completely content with the Apple Podcast app in general, because, you know, there's so many third-party podcast apps that do so many cool and different things with smart playlists, you know, smart speed, all this kind of stuff. But most people just want to listen to the show when it's done. They want it to go away. And I think they've, at least for me, the way that I use the Apple Podcast app, they've made changes to benefit that. Whereas, because before I would kind of ignore those advanced features and just remember not to click on these things. But if you did use that stuff, now you're not so happy and you probably have to look elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I think what they did makes sense. Like, as the system app, I feel like they should go for the mass market approach. And the old podcast app was pretty technical in some of the weird ways that you could configure it. And so they basically just stripped all that down for what I think is, you know, focusing on the 80-20 case of 80% of the features rather than focusing on like the 20% area.
Yeah, I just find it showing it play and don't even notice. I'd be like, oh, the artwork looks a little bit different now. That's it. And that's all I noticed. So I'm surviving. And what's Spotify doing this week with
So Spotify kind of very quickly after Apple announced their podcast subscription stuff, Spotify came out and basically did the same thing. Their gist is they're not going to charge the podcast creators for a cut of the revenue, at least for the first 2 years. After 2 years, they say they're going to begin by taking a 5% cut, and presumably that will increase over time. Apple's is 30% for the first year and then 15% for any years after that.
Wait, 5% cut after 2 years and then increase over time?
I mean, they say it's 0% for the first 2 years and then it's going to start at 5% in 2023.
Okay.
This Spotify press release sounds very rushed together. And I'm sure it was in development for a while, but there's a lot of it where they're like, subscribe any content we will support in some way. Do you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't sound like they've really got the details nailed out. And it's only launching in like 4 countries to start, or, you know, it's not, whereas Apple's going to be in 100 countries from day one or something.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of feel like they just kind of felt pressured to announce the same kind of thing. And the critical difference is Spotify will not let you subscribe in the Spotify application. So the Apple,
because it would be an app,
there's
going to
be a subscribe button right below the, you know, the follow button in Apple Podcasts. You press the button and you'd be subscribed. But Spotify is saying on iOS or Android, you won't actually be able to activate the premium content from within the app. You'll have to go to like the Spotify website, know to go to the website, then unlock the show and go from there. Mm. So Spotify obviously have to do that because they're avoiding the in-app purchase rules of the App Store and the Google Play Store.
Right.
But from a customer perspective, it's going to be way less visible and way less discoverable. And I'd argue if you're telling your listeners to go to a website to sign up anyway, then you might as well use one of these other systems.
A full membership program,
yeah. Right? Mm-hmm. Like the Apple Podcast solution does have the convenience of just being able to subscribe in the app itself. So that does make it different, right? Like with Apple Podcasts, you're losing the full membership capabilities, but the core press this button that's right here inside the app that you're already using to give us some money is like, that's a big value win for sure.
Yeah. And what some call convenience, others call a major antitrust issue. But luckily, people don't use podcasts as evidence in trials.
Yeah. Like Spotify is basically just probably gearing up to offer an alternative to like Memberful or Patreon, right? Whereas Apple has gone like more for the direct, here's just a way to subscribe to a show in our app. And there were, just while we were talking about podcasts really quickly, there was also news that Apple has acquired a original podcast that isn't going to have a TV component to it. So that does give more weight to the idea that they are going to do original shows of their own and not just the premium content from partners.
Okay.
iOS 14.5 came out. We'll cover the features in just a sec. First up this week, Happy Hour is brought to you by TomTalk, the design-driven bag brand for iPad. The Padfolio case from TomTalk is specially designed to prevent damage and maximize the use of your iPad, and it looks great too. TomTalk's Padfolio case has a ton of capacity with elasticized segments and extra mesh, allowing for plenty of storage. As well as the iPad itself, it has extra compartments to fit all of your iPad accessories and more. You can easily store your cables, your Apple Pencil, and various USB-C adapters and dongles. The iPad sits in a separate compartment behind the accessory sleeve, big enough to fit your iPad and a Magic Keyboard or Smart Keyboard Folio. The Pad Folio case zips up and provides 360-degree protection for your iPad, and in addition to being a really convenient place to put all your stuff. There's even space in there for something like a portable hard drive, so if you wanted to carry around your work on a disk as well as your iPad itself, this case is a great solution for that. It features a hard shell exterior that protects the precious tech inside. It uses water-repellent fabric to give you peace of mind when you take your iPad on the go in all weather conditions. And it also features a comfortable handle and ergonomic groove design, so you'll enjoy carrying it around. You can get the Pad Folio in an assortment of colours. There's 10 to choose from. And every purchase is backed by TomTok's 2-year worry-free warranty. Pad Folio is available now for the 10.2-inch, 10.5-inch iPad, the new 10.9-inch iPad Air, and the 11-inch iPad Pro models. Hit up the link in the show notes to shop TomTok and get 20% off site-wide. And don't forget to check out our upcoming giveaway of an iPad Pro this Friday on 9to5 Rewards. So once again, link in the show notes to get 20% off and check out the site for the TomTok iPad Pro giveaway.
All right, iOS 14.5 is finally here. This is the big one. This is the one that has the Apple Watch Unlock feature. I know for me, I keep forgetting to change my Siri voice to one of the new ones that I like. since going from the beta to the, what is it now? They call it the release candidate.
Release candidate. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. What's the state of all of this right now?
Yeah. So 14.5 brings all sorts of stuff. I mean, the thing that most people care about is the Face ID unlock, right? And that's where you can unlock your iPhone with your Apple Watch on your wrist, assuming your Apple Watch is nearby, it's unlocked, and that the iPhone Face ID sensors detect that you're wearing a mask, i.e. your mouth is obstructed. You have to enable it. It's not on by default, so if you want to turn it on, you have to go like settings, passcode, and flick it on there. Once your iPhone and your Apple Watch is updated. I've obviously been using this feature throughout the beta season, and it definitely makes you happier, right? Like, there's just times when the Face ID wouldn't work because you're wearing a face mask, and now it works. And more than that, I find many opportunities where I'm not wearing a face mask, but I'm just unlocking the phone at a weird angle. And it would be a case where the iPhone would ask me to type in my passcode because the Face ID detection didn't work. But because the Apple Watch is on the wrist, it just works anyway. So although the feature specifically says it requires you to be wearing a face mask to unlock, clearly that detection is not super picky, because in a lot of cases, the phone can be like facing the ceiling, it could be off angle, and it'll unlock anyway. So, and that's, and you know, that obviously presents some security risk, I guess. Mm-hmm. But for me, the convenience is way worth it. I wish that this feature was like advertised as just unlock with your Apple Watch. I think it's great.
Yeah, just remember to turn it on, because that was my lesson in the beta period. Was it? Yeah. It won't work if you don't turn it on.
It won't work if you don't turn it on.
Yeah. What else we have in this release?
Yeah, so there's new emoji. They've got some nice updates to News Plus. When News Plus first came out, my big complaint was they made it too hard to find your actual like library of magazines and newspapers. They've simplified the whole thing down. So the News Plus tab now, it like defaults just to like your library, and you've just got two columns of thumbnails of your library, and then they've got simple sections for like featured or newspapers. So if you just want to see the newspapers in there, you can click on that. And categories for like actually searching the catalog. It's basically what they should have done from day one, but it just took them 2 years to get there.
Yeah. I'm having flashbacks to February when we first discussed this in beta.
Yeah. Yeah. Fitness Plus works with AirPlay now. So you can use it on smart TVs, not just an Apple TV box, which is nice, because I think a lot of people were mad about that when it was like, oh, I've got Fitness Plus on my new Apple Watch, but you've forced me to buy a $180 Apple TV box, Apple, you know, screw you, blah, blah, blah. So now you can just use it with an AirPlay 2 compatible TV. Hopefully they're going to bring it to the Mac sometime soon. But in fact, my favorite feature of this entire release cycle, because obviously we had 14.5 on the watch, you had the WatchOS update, 7.4. But the big news for me, at least, macOS 11.3 came out, and it puts AirPlay 2 in the sound menu.
Yeah, just in time for HomePods.
To be discontinued.
To be discontinued. Yeah, this is one of those features that we talked about when HomePod was brand new. And it's like, why can't you use your HomePod as your desktop speakers for your computer if you have a stereo pair, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And now you can.
So you've always been able, because every time I mention this feature, people get confused, right? So if you had like the music app or a specific video app using the system video player, you could actually pick the stereo pair before now. It would shut.
You could do what's called switch to, where instead of playing from your Mac to the HomePod over AirPlay, you're playing from the HomePod, but you're controlling it from your Mac. Your Mac is just a remote in that situation. But you weren't actually playing it. Like, you couldn't do your Mac system audio or Mac from, you know, a web player or somewhere like that. It was just the sanctioned app. It was just music. It wasn't even the podcast app, right? Like,
I think I think the podcast app you could do, because it would switch to the podcast app.
Eventually.
Yeah. Eventually. It wasn't like that originally. They added that support in. But So that's the difference. And it's kind of like the difference between the Apple TV's like connect to a HomePod to play the sound versus being the default system audio, which is a big HomePod exclusive feature still, even though the HomePod's discontinued. The HomePod Mini doesn't have the same system level support as for the audio on the Apple TV. But now on the Mac, you can go to the sound menu in your menu bar, and before you would see each if you had a stereo pair HomePod, it would just have each listed individually. So you could target it, but it only play out the left or the right side, which is just stupid. But now the speakers are unified as a stereo pair. You get the right icon, you can click on it, and it plays over both. If you have generic system, now there is a lag, right? There's probably about like a second lag. So if you're just clicking around and stuff, there will be a delay. But that was the same as it was before. You just now get the benefit of being across two speakers. And if you use, in select cases, like YouTube in Safari or YouTube in Chrome, basically stuff that knows about the audio, the proper audio APIs of the system, of the macOS system, they can basically be informed about the delay. And they can offset it. So if you watch a video in YouTube and Safari while you've got your AirPlay 2 speakers activated in the sound menu, it will like delay the video frames by about the same time as the audio delay. So the speech will be synced up, like the lips movements won't be way out. Like it's not exact, but it's really close. And if you just want to like use your Mac and just have the sound go out there, it's so nice. I wish they've had this since day one, but here it is. Like, it's literally come out after the HomePod has been discontinued. But I'm currently sitting here on my office desk with two HomePods, two discontinued HomePods. I love them even more because now this functionality is available.
Yeah, and it's really good on HomePod Mini as well, because a HomePod Mini, especially in a stereo pair, is better than the built-in speakers on a MacBook Air, for example. So it's good for that. And then this is the week where finally this WWDC feature from last summer is actually rolled out. Apple Tracking Transparency, ATT, which is nothing to do with AT&T, just ATT. And this is now in iOS live, as was warned by Apple many, many, many months ago, right?
Yeah. And it was going to originally come out with iOS 14, and then they delayed it to the spring, after some, you know, backlash and to give people time to adopt it. It is live with 14.5, but it obviously requires the apps to tell the system to present the prompt, because it's just like location services in that way. When the apps want to get access to IDFA or, you know, other tracking, they tell the system, show the prompt to the user, and then the system shows the prompt, and then it tells the app what the result was, right? In the cases of apps, like when I first updated to iOS 14.5 release candidate, it was really hard for me to find an app that would actually show the prompt. Like, in the end, I downloaded the CNBC app, and that did it, because I saw other people on Twitter using the CNBC app, and it threw it up because I just wanted to try it out. But for me, when I launched like Facebook and Instagram, there wasn't a pop-up. What Facebook has said is that they are, over the course of the next few weeks, rolling out the presentation of this dialogue across to their users. So if you haven't seen it immediately on updating to 14.5, it is going to happen. Facebook is like, they're not rebelling to the point of not showing the dialogue at all. It's just they say they're going to do it gradually over time. If you look at the exact App Store rules, I'm pretty sure gradually rolling out over time is not one of the supported cases, because it basically says you must show it after you update. But I guess that's what's happening. They're doing it over the course of a few weeks.
Yeah, the ATT police aren't going to go out and get Facebook, I guess. But it's so when you get this alert, you know, it's do you want this app to track you? You know, track me or don't track me? What I'm thinking about is, you know, if you turn off cookies on a browser, you're going to have a bad time. If you turn off JavaScript on your browser, you're going to have a bad time. But you can. Is this one of those things where it's going to limit your experience with using apps in the way that you want to? Or is it going to have no effect that you'd ever notice? And to say yes or no has no functional difference. You know, to opt out, you're not missing out on anything. And to opt in, you're maybe just going to have better targeted advertisements.
Yeah, I mean, that is what Apple promises. And the App Store rules say that an app's not allowed to incentivize users to press allow, right? And it's not allowed to disincentivize users by pressing deny. So the app is meant to behave identically in both cases, apart from the fact that it can't use, you know, user demographics and share that with advertisers to give you better ads, for instance, or whatever else they're doing with the sharing of the data. Mm-hmm. So theoretically, your functionality in the application should be exactly the same, apart from the ads might not be quite as relevant to you that you see. Mm-hmm. So in a perfect world, that sounds fantastic, right? Now, all of that policy is up in the air about, you know, how much is App Review actually going to check that that's happening? Or what if a big company like Facebook was like, oh, we just won't let you use this, this super important feature of our app, like that you can't upload images to the newsfeed anymore unless you give us access to data tracking. Is Apple really going to put their foot down on that? Like that remains to be a question. And I'm sure some companies are going to try and push the boundaries and see what happens. But the official rules are that an app must behave identically regardless of whether they're allowed to do this or not. And Apple's obviously encouraging these apps to, they want as many apps as possible to never show this dialogue because they never track, right? That's what they hope. They hope that by introducing this visibility over time, developers will find, oh, we don't actually need personalized ads. We'll just do other ads, right? And so you don't even need to ask. We'll just revert to the more simplistic model.
Yeah. And there is a system level way of saying, don't even ask me for permission to track. So it's settings, privacy, tracking, and then allow apps to request to track, and you can turn that off. So far, I've only had one app ask me to track, and it's a local delivery food services app, and I see that I've got it toggled off. Food still comes. But you could untoggle that whole thing, and then you'd never see the pop-up request at all. You'd just be opted out of tracking altogether, which is probably the ideal thing to do if you don't want to see this alert, because it doesn't, you know, there's no incentive to do it.
Yeah, if you're not into it, you can just flick that switch off and every app will be told that you've told them not to track you, right? Mm-hmm. It just does it silently. The language of the alert is interesting. So the options are allow or ask app not to track. So I've seen some people say, well, why is Apple like saying ask? Does that mean the developers don't have to listen to the response? Like, why does it not say deny or tell them not to? Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
And the reason they use like the weaker language of ask is that only part, when you press ask app not to track on the dialogue, the IDFA, so the identifier token that the system used to just give to every app without any checking, right? It would just give this system token that identifies the current device uniquely, which is what that the advertiser would receive. So when you open a different third-party app, that app would also report the same IDFA token, and then they could cross the data together and, you know, match it up, basically. Well, when you press ask app not to track, the IDFA is blank, so that the app can't use that piece of information anymore to do any tracking. But there are other strategies and other ways that an app can try and track you, like fingerprinting, where they can use all sorts of random characteristics about your behavior to then try and synthesize some way to bring it back to you. Those other strategies, other techniques, Apple doesn't have a way to enforce at a system technical level to stop it from happening. So by pressing ask app not to track, they do what they can by not allowing the IDFA to leak out anymore, but they are basically trusting the developer to follow the App Store review guidelines, the rules of the App Store, which is if they say this, you're not allowed to use fingerprinting or anything else. But basically, probably for legal reasons, Apple's having to use the language of ask app not to track because they can't guarantee that an app is actually going to comply in every single case. They do say that if they find apps that aren't complying, they'll get rejected, and then, you know, repeat attempts, we'll see their app removed from the store entirely. Again, those threats only work if they're actually followed through on, so we'll have to see how that progresses over time. But if every app on the App Store followed Apple's rules to the letter, Ask App Not to Track does exactly what you want it to do. The app won't share any information with a third party that can identify you. So it's actually, I think this is a great feature, to be honest. When the privacy nutrition labels launched like last year, I said they're basically not going to make any difference. And I think we're proven right there, because who reads them and what difference do they make? Basically nothing. But this is an actual meaningful feature. And most apps, including all the high profile apps, are going to comply. Like, they just are. And in that way, you'll be sharing less data with third parties that you didn't even know you were sharing in the past. So in that way, it can't be anything but a good sign. You see? There is the controversy over what Apple defines as tracking. Like, Apple will say they define tracking as sharing user data with a third party. Like, they don't count tracking as so Facebook can collect all the information about you and store it on its own ad servers to serve ads to you. What it can't do is share that data with someone else. So previously, an app would, like, a different app that isn't Facebook would use the Facebook SDK to show ads. Like, they basically run an ad network in another app, right? And that is what's being blocked by this alert, because the Facebook SDK won't be able to work out who the user is. But if you're in the Facebook app itself, it can use all the information about you to target your ads anyway. Does that make sense? So inside the Facebook app, you're basically not going to see any difference. It's where that Facebook data would be used elsewhere. That's what's getting cut off.
Okay.
And that's annoying. Well, that's very convenient for Apple, because they count the App Store as a first-party app to all of their apps. So Apple's allowed to use any information about your App Store behavior to show you ads in the App Store, in Apple News, in the Stocks app, etc. And so that's what's currently under some lawsuits, basically, is that Apple's defined this version of tracking so that they're excluded. So all of their ad network doesn't have to show this prompt ever, because they count the App Store as the same first party as their own apps, right? And there's a lot of debate going on about whether Apple should, because they are the platform owner as well, whether they should treat the App Store as a separate entity. And in which case, if you went into the news app should ask you, do you want to share user data, which would then correlate to the App Store. But as it stands now, Apple conveniently treats the App Store and the Apple News as coming from the same developer, Apple, so they don't actually have to show the prompt at all.
Okay.
And then just a final niche on this app tracking transparency thing. That toggle, ask apps not, allow apps to request to tracking in the settings, is grayed out for some people. Apple says it should be grayed out if you are under the age of 13, if you are on a enterprise managed profile, or if your Apple ID has been set up in the last 3 days. So basically, if you shouldn't be tracked, that toggle will be grayed out and you won't be able to turn it on, right? But we have seen reports from readers that for inexplicable reasons, their toggle is grayed out and they don't sit in any of those three conditions that I just said. So there does seem to be a bug there where people that want to opt in to seeing these alerts can't, because the settings grayed out for who knows why. And we've asked Apple about it and they don't seem to know either. So at some point, there'll probably be a bug fix and a future software update that actually makes it work again. But as it stands, some of you out there will probably have this setting in grayed out and there's nothing you can do about it.
All right, ATT, that's it.
And we'll obviously keep abreast of the lawsuits and stuff that carries on, and we'll see how that shakes out. Happy Hour this week is also sponsored by BetterHelp. Look, it's been a stressful year for a lot of us. Life is hard normally, but the pandemic certainly hasn't helped matters. Do you feel strained or just not as happy as you do normally? Sometimes you just want someone to talk to who is trained about mental health and lifestyle. BetterHelp is quite literally here to help, and it lets you do just that from the comfort of your own home. BetterHelp assesses your needs to match you with a licensed professional therapist tailored to help your personal well-being. Simply connect in a safe and crucially private online environment. And after signing up, you can start communicating to a therapist in under 24 hours. This is not run-of-the-mill self-help. It's a professional counseling experience. You can access counselors specialized in all sorts of areas like stress, anger, relationships, depression, sleeping, and more. You can start a conversation with your therapist at your convenience. Just send a message at any time. The therapist responds in a timely basis, and you can schedule weekly video chats or phone calls if you want to as well. BetterHelp is more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid options are available. And of course, everything you talk about is 100% private and confidential. Start living a happier life today. As a listener to this show, you can get 10% off your first month by visiting our sponsor at betterhelp.com/machappyhour. Join over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health. Again, that's BetterHelp, BetterHelp.com/machappyhour, or one word, betterhelp.com/machappyhour.
All right, Apple made some money this first quarter of this year that we are in. This one was kind of a surprise earnings result for Apple, right?
Yeah, like obviously the timelines are kind of wonky because of the fact that the iPhone was delayed, right? So it was pushed into the fourth quarter rather than the start of September. So some year-over-year compares are a bit unfair just because of the shift in timeline, and that's why like their financial results in January were so much higher than the year before, because the iPhone release time difference, right?
Right.
But this quarter is exceptional even if you account for the iPhone time difference. Like, this quarter was... they made boatloads of money. It's the best quarter ever, apart from the most recent two holiday quarters. So you subtract the two most recent holiday quarters where they released the iPhone and everything else in the fall, right?
Mm-hmm.
Apart from those, this last 3 months was Apple's biggest ever for revenue. They reported $89.6 billion in revenue and $23.6 billion in profit. Now, I don't normally sit here and like congratulate Apple's earnings because frankly, I don't care about it. But that number is actually staggering for January through to March. Like, pretty insane. They had growth in every segment. They had growth in iPhone, they had growth in Mac, they had growth in iPad, they had growth in services, they had growth in watch. Like, I don't understand who's buying all this stuff, but they are going like gangbusters.
Like, so it's I mean, maybe it's the world coming back online, but it's hard to pinpoint it. I mean, you know, before we could say like the iPhone 6 and 6 Plus, those were way overdue hits, you know, that was pent up demand. I think the lack of that is what's, you know, kind of what we're curious about here is like why we're scratching our heads as to why it was, you know, excluding the last two holiday quarters, the biggest quarter they've ever had.
Yeah. I mean, Apple says that the 5G element has spurred a lot of sales. And as much as I hate 5G, that probably is true. But it's not just iPhone. Like, iPhone was up 65%, Mac was up 70%, iPad was up 79%. Like, the Mac and the iPad, this doesn't include any sales of the just announced redesigned ones, right? This is just January to March. So I guess the M1 Macs are doing really well for Apple because they must have sold like a massive MacBook Airs and stuff. And the iPads are selling well too. Like, it's easy to go, oh, that's just because everybody's working from home. But I mean, this time last year, people were working from home as well. This was like pandemic time, right? Like,
And they've already kind of reported that they've had, before they changed the iMac, but even during, you know, when M1 was announced, I guess, that iMac was doing very, very well because of the work from home situation.
Yeah, like the work from home situation, isn't that what people have been buying computers from Apple at increased rate all through last year? So You'd think that the effect would slow down, but apparently not. They've literally... I mean, every division was up by at least 26%. And the hardware divisions, Mac, iPad, and iPhone, were up 70% each. Like, pretty ridiculous. One interesting point was they did say the chip shortage. So, you know, we've been talking about this for a while. Is this going to affect Apple in a way? Are stuff going to be delayed? Well, they finally acknowledged on this earnings call that they are going to be affected by it next quarter. I think they quoted like $5 billion worth of impact. Cook said this was due to supply constraints of legacy nodes, which sounds like stuff that isn't TSMC made, so not like the A14 chip or the M1 chip, but like other chips that go into their devices, maybe Intel CPUs, right? Like stuff that isn't like Apple Silicon, because Apple has, you know, like a dominant contract with TSMC to basically just buy all the chips that they pump out, right? So it's not that that's causing them supply shortages. It's just like other chips, because obviously it's not just an Apple Silicon chip in a Mac, right? There's so many chips on that logic board, and if there are limits on any of them, then you have supply chain constraints. So they say next quarter there is going to be constraints on Mac and iPad because of the chip shortage. So far, iPhone is unaffected, but it's tight, basically, is the takeaway.
Okay.
And they said that they now have 660 million paid subscriptions on their books. That's a crazy number, but that does include all third-party app subscriptions. So,
right, so
any subscription that you do within that purchase is included in that 660 million number. Apple doesn't break out what percentage of that 660 million is for their own services, like Music, iCloud, News, TV Plus, etc. They just never released numbers on it. The last time they released any numbers like this was June 2019. They said Apple Music had 60 million subscribers, paying subscribers at that time, and they haven't given an updated number since. So that's like more than 2 years ago. I think analysts believe that it's around like 200 million, and that's mostly dominated by Apple Music and iCloud subscriptions, right? I think people don't currently see like Arcade or TV Plus or News or Fitness having that many, you know, they're not as popular at the moment, right? By a long shot. But it would be nice if at some point Apple would, you know, report any numbers again. These earnings calls are just like, yeah, we made so much revenue.
They used to be so interesting whenever they were, you know, at least broken out by devices, you know.
Yeah, they tell you device numbers, and like services is meant to be their big growth area. Like if I was an Apple investor, I'd be a bit miffed that they don't give any clarity on that 660 million device number.
Yeah, I mean, like, if you were an investor, you could say, I'm quite concerned that, you know, this could all be leaning on subscriptions through the App Store that could be affected by, you know, policy that could change, right?
Yeah, like, what if Apple suddenly told they're not allowed to charge 30% anymore? That's like, you know, that's 200, that's like 400 million subscriptions that say that they're going to make no money from.
Right.
I mean, and there was a quote where it was like, Cook said something like, we go where the market takes us, which was sort of an admission that maybe the high commissions they get off those 600 million subscriptions won't last forever. But obviously they're not going to say anything specific until they're told to. And I think the news is that the European Competition Commission is set to announce charges against App Store policy. So, like, they're going to say that it's anti-competitive either, like, later this week or early next week. So, stuff is happening in that area, and we'll have to see how that develops. A kind of other trend in the services department at the moment is we've seen Netflix put up their prices. We've seen Spotify put up their prices this week. Disney Plus put in their prices. One of the analysts actually asked Cook about this. He said, do you see Apple putting up prices on, you know, music, TV, etc.? Tim said, we have nothing to announce at this time. We believe we offer good value. And do you know what? I think they do offer good value for their subscriptions, right? Not iCloud. Let's ignore that, right? Because I think iCloud should be like built in. But if you take like music and stuff, like, like when they announced the pricing for Apple One last year, I was like, wow, this is actually affordable. Like, this is actually good and reasonable. And as soon as I said it's good and reasonable, an alarm bell started going off in my head going, they're going to put the prices up at some point. And I still believe at some point the prices are going to go up. Like, it's just a matter of when. And because if you're Spotify and you can suddenly start charging $2 more per user and get away with it, Apple's going to want to join that game too.
Like, yeah,
it's just going to happen. And especially like TV Plus, is not going to be $4.99 forever. When they get a lot more content, they're going to put the price up. It's a natural thing. So I feel like I'm getting a good deal from Apple One at the moment, but I do expect in the fullness of time that price is going to slowly creep upwards. You subscribe to Apple One, right?
Apple One Premier. The $30 per month one. Plus my former mother-in-law, she's on my family sharing, and she's got a 99 cent per month iCloud subscription. Because I think I have to like explain with her, like, you have to turn that off and then you can get into the one that that's 2 terabytes. The family share. One, yeah. And then just haven't had that conversation. So every month.
Yeah, and in addition to it only being $30 a month, right now I get $5 there for every month because of the TV Plus free trial work compensation. Yeah,
the credit in the App Store, however. Yeah. To your Apple ID.
All right, well, that was Apple's earnings. They made so much money that they basically didn't need to answer any questions. Yeah. Unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
Something fun that actually happened last week, but obviously we were flooded in event news. Bloomberg actually is giving us our first insight into iOS 15. Mark Gurman gave us some reporting on iOS 15 features. High level, he called it the biggest update to the iPad home screen since the original iPad, which sounds amazing, but then the only thing he said was that widgets are going to be on the home screen.
I mean, that's literally what Apple said about the iOS 14 home screen for iPhone. It's just the biggest update since the original iPhone. And this is, you know, in a big way, it's getting the iPad up to parity with the iPhone from last year, which we all expected. And if it was true for the iPhone, it's true for the iPad, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I hope that it's more than just you can put widgets wherever you want, like... They have to sort out the multitasking. That's my number one request. Just redo multitasking, make it so much easier to switch between apps, and I'd be so happy. Mm-hmm. And that probably involves the home screen, right? Like maybe you have a recent apps list on the home screen itself, and you can see little thumbnails and just tap on it right there. Something like that. Like if all the iPad OS 15 is just bringing like widgets and the app library from... i.e. what they did on the iPhone last year, I'll be so disappointed. And yeah, technically, I guess that would be the biggest update to the iPad home screen they've ever done, but it wouldn't be satisfying to me, let's put it that way.
Mm, yeah.
And there was also, Gurman also said that the iPhone lock screen is going to be updated, which is good news, although he didn't specify details. You know, we've obviously been talking a while, like the lock screen's pretty dumb. It'd be cool if it could be more like an Apple Watch home screen, right, where there's complications and dynamic... you know, wallpapers and all sorts of stuff. Hopefully, I guess there's only like a month and a week now until WWDC.
Yeah.
Maybe Gurman won't have a time to fit it in another report in, but since then, but let's see if we get any more information on the lock screen. The thing that Gurman did have some detail on specifically was new notifications features. He said that users will be able to customize their alert preferences depending on the current activity that they're doing. He gave examples like driving, working, or sleeping. Users will be able to create their own categories, so you'd be able to have a custom activity that you could assign stuff to. He gave an example that the iPhone could be set to only make a sound when the user's not at work, or certain apps would only buzz you if you're in a compatible activity mode. Like if you're in, you know, resting or sleeping, then all these apps don't actually allow to make notifications, whereas if you're just in like work mode, then maybe Slack's allowed to be buzzing at you all day long. That's a pretty cool feature, I think. And I hope they can tie it in with the Apple Watch. So like we spoke about this when you were talking about the watch, was it last week or the week before?
Yeah.
About how you don't really have the granularity to choose what things go to your phone or what things go to your watch. If you could say like, you know, I'm working, it's fine to give me every Slack message that ever happens in the room. Great. But when you're just at nighttime, just chilling out, then you could have it in a mode where that doesn't happen and your watch isn't vibrating on your wrist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually went into, I think it's going out this weekend or so, but the final episode of Watch Time, I went into that article that I had written about kind of managing how the Apple Watch can interrupt you, and then some feature requests that make it a lot better in the future. I'm also curious, you know, with iOS 14, there were a number of things that were rumored that were leaked that we reported on that didn't make it, including, say, for example, like a section for wallpapers that third-party apps can integrate with. And so I'm curious if any of those features we can look back on and say now they're probably going to come with iOS 15, or if they just didn't make the cut, you know, at all. But since there's so little known about iOS 15 in general, especially for the phone, then I'm wondering if we can look backward at some of those features that didn't make it yet and consider those iOS 15 features coming.
Yeah, for sure. Like, and then there was that thing, I think it was even 2 years ago, about how the mail app was going to get like snoozing and other features, right, to bring it more up to date. And that just never happened. They gave it that stupid toolbar for a few months and that was about it.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, new notifications features, updated lock screen, iPad home screen update. And then Mark says that Apple's working on new features for iMessage that would bring it more into line with WhatsApp and potentially give it like social networking features like current status and stuff, which is interesting. He does say, though, that that project's in early stages and might not actually make the cut for iOS 15. So it might be in development, but we won't see it in June.
Yeah. Did you see the thing? I think it was from the Epic trial that's coming up this month. I think it was Eddie Q who had proposed iMessage for Android, and he was just outvoted. So if you want iMessage for Android, praise Eddie Q and, you know, give the stink eye to everyone who outvoted him.
Yeah, like, these conversations happen all the time at Apple, I'm sure. Like, if you asked Eddie Q today, would he still think that they should put iMessage on Android? That's a different question to whether he thought they should in 2013, you know? Like, in that email thread, they were worried that Google was going to create a competitive messaging app that would become the dominant messaging app in the world. And they were clearly wrong about that. So, like, I don't think Google's shown any competency in making a messaging app that can support itself for more than a year. What happened was Facebook dominates messaging with WhatsApp. That's what's risen as the main competition. And iMessage is, you know, iMessage is, like, popular, but it's not number one, I guess, right? And it not being on Android isn't going to make it difficult to be number one. But does Apple care about that? Because nowadays they just use iMessage as a feature of the iPhone, right? So they can argue that the iPhone's so successful because iMessage is like an exclusive feature to it, and everyone loves their blue bubbles, right? But I struggle to see why Apple would want to bring iMessage to Android. Like, I'd love to ask Q, like, why he thought it was a good idea, right? Other than just it just existing on Android just so the Apple presence could be there.
Yeah, you put ads for in the Android version or something. I don't know.
Because they've still shown, like, a reticence to really do Android support. Like, they have Apple Music on Android, but that was because Beats Music was on Android, so they carried it along. But there isn't an Apple TV app for Android, like, for Android phones. They've done it for the boxes and the TV sticks, right? But the actual, like, just standard Android phones and tablets, there's no TV app, there's no podcast app. They haven't done anything apart from Apple Music, essentially. So whatever they thought in 2013, clearly they have no interest in pursuing that today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, let's take our last ad break of the episode. We are sponsored this week by Text Expander. Thanks to our friends at Smile Software for sponsoring the show. Text Expander lets you take repetitive typing, searching for answers. It can sort out all of that. You don't need to worry about typing the same thing time and time again. You can take your time back. Turn the things you type into reusable snippets that can be used again and again. Improve your productivity this year by taking advantage of Text Expander. It removes repetition out of your work so you can focus on what matters most. Save time and be consistent while you're at it. Speed through email. Just type a short abbreviation that expands into a reusable form with fill-in-the-blank fields to customize the reply as appropriate for the current message. Text Expander makes it easy to give your team the right words for every situation. Get it right every time. Whether you need to keep legal happy or delight customers with effective answers, you can rest easy in the knowledge that your team has got it covered. With Text Expander, you can keep your team accurate and current with all the changes and latest messaging for your business and brand. Share your text and images with your entire staff to keep them on track. Use Text Expander's powerful shortcuts and abbreviations to streamline and speed up everything that you type. Create a powerful snippet once, and then you can use the assigned abbreviation to let Text Expander do the rest of the job for you. No more repetitive typing and no chance for human error. Text Expander works everywhere that you type, from Slack to Google Docs to Trello, email, web browsers, the lot. And you can get Text Expander on Mac, Windows, Chrome, iPhone, and iPad. Take back your time and unlock your productivity with Text Expander. Listeners to this show can get 20% off their first year subscription. Just visit textexpander.com/podcast to learn more and sign up. That's textexpander.com/podcast.
Mm-hmm. All right. So Apple TV Plus stuff. This is some things we've been putting off to talk about and with the event happening recently and everything. So let's begin. I mean, these were literally in our notes a few weeks ago and we just didn't get to them. So we'll start out by talking about the Roku and the Apple TV button on the Roku remote.
Yeah. So about a month ago now, Roku announced their latest version of their voice remote, and it was notable to us because Roku has these, they basically get people to pay for placement on the remote. So literal like advertising for the button. So they have their remote, and then at the bottom, there's like three or four buttons that have logos of services. So there's like YouTube and Netflix and Disney Plus and Sling. And well, this latest version of the remote is advertised as having an Apple TV Plus button. So you can press the Apple TV Plus button. It has the Apple logo on it. You press that, it launches the TV Plus app on your Roku. These programmable buttons can't be changed. So that I guess they're not programmable. These advertising buttons can't be changed. They only launch the app. That's it. They have the Roku remote has other buttons which are programmable, so you can make them do whatever you want. But the advertising buttons, they're fixed in plastic. They only launch the Apple TV app. You can't change them or switch them out in any way. Which is interesting because we wondered whether Apple was going to, like, Apple putting its logo on any other hardware is notable, right? Like, and the fact that they're willing to do it for TV Plus kind of shows their commitment to it. And you know for sure they're paying for that. Like, our colleague Chance Miller said that there was a report from like 2019 where YouTube was basically paying $1 per remote sold to get their logo on front of the Roku remote. So, I mean, Apple is subsidizing the Roku box that is five times cheaper than the Apple TV.
Yeah, it's a pretty big advertisement to be on the remote, though. And it's not a bad button to have. I mean, there's some, you could have a lot worse buttons than that for other services.
Yeah, I mean, I think it just shows that they are committed to this, right? Like, because you still hear the whole thing like, TV Plus is just there to sell more iPhones. It keeps people in the Apple ecosystem. It's like a cherry on the top, right? But if that was the case, they wouldn't be so aggressive in getting the TV app rolled out to all these other platforms, and they certainly wouldn't be paying for advertising space on other people's hardware. Like, they want people to subscribe to TV Plus in and of itself. It's not just like an iPhone extra. And at some point, whether it's this year, next year, the year after, they're going to stop the whole thing where you buy a new phone and you get a year free, right? Like, that's there to bootstrap its launch. It's not there as the long-term strategy. And the existence of a physical button is just one more thing in that quiver. Rather amusingly, today, there was an interesting discovery about the Apple TV remote. So the revamped Siri remote was announced at the Apple event. And one thing it notably lacked was any mention of, like, Find My Support, even though it was announced literally directly after the AirTag announcement. So it kind of stood out like a sore thumb. But what's curious is if you ask Siri on iOS 14.5 to find your Siri remote, it will actually answer as if it can do that. It says, you don't have any Siri remotes linked to your iCloud account. If you ask for, like, other random accessories, it says, Find My does not support this device type. But for some reason, iOS 14.5 Siri seems to believe that the Apple TV remote will be able to work with it, which is interesting.
And we should know in the second half of May.
Secret feature that they're going to, like, unveil next week when the Apple TV remote starts shipping or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, no. I reckon this is probably, like, they work on this feature and it never actually got ready to ship and they just forgot to take it out of the software. What do you think?
Oh, man, I always bet against it happening, you know. But just for fun, because there's nothing at stake here, I'm going to say that it ends up panning out. It's going to be a feature.
Yeah, I mean, it is weird they don't have it. Like, Mark last year had a report in about August that Apple was working on a revamped Apple TV remote and it would include Find My integration. And then the event rolls around and it's just like, we got a new remote, it's got a new trackpad, it's got some new buttons, but you want to make it make a sound when you lose it? Well, tough luck. and even on Twitter, I've seen some people joke that they're going to just stick an AirTag to the bottom of the remote, like, which feels so stupid because they could just integrate the functionality. And this Siri request seems to suggest that they were at least thinking about it. So
that could be an AirTag case, though, you know, because the cases are fret. You could slide the remote into the AirTag case.
That is true. That's true. So I bet someone somewhere is working on that accessory. Elsewhere in TV Plus land, there was a report from The Information that Apple is actually upping its investment in original film production. So when TV Plus launched, there was an interview with the executives of TV Plus, Jamie Ehrlich and Zach Van Amberg. They said, as far as movies are concerned, this was back in November 2019, Apple was going to focus on 10 to 12 movies a year, and they were going to eventize them, quote unquote, and give them a lot of marketing and production value. And they kind of sneered at Netflix, who was doing like 100 films a year. They were like, no film can get enough attention if you're doing 100 of them in a year. We're going to focus on, you know, a smaller set of a dozen films that we can really put ourselves behind and get them out into the world, right? Well, according to the information, Apple has recently revised that plan, and they have higher ambitions for film production based on strong reception to films like the Tom Hanks film Greyhound and Wolfwalkers. Now it's said that Apple is raising up its production targets, so they want to make more than 12 a year. And as part of that effort, they're actually hiring away someone from Warner Media. So the person who used to run film production at HBO Max, a woman called Jessie Henderson, she's now been hired into the Apple Original Films division to obviously help them foster the content to bring out more than 12 films a year, which I think is pretty cool because I like Apple TV Plus's shows. I've liked a few of their movies, not all of them. But if they are seeing good success with them, then it makes sense for them to make more of them. So here you go. Mm-hmm. And it comes at a time when we've seen, like, you know, HBO Max has made a big wave by making all of their movies from Warner Media exclusive to HBO Max this year, in addition to cinema releases, right? Like, they're releasing them simultaneously on HBO Max and while they would be in theatrical windows. That has been a big deal. There was a big deal with Netflix and Sony. So from next year, all Sony films will get their first window distribution rights given over to Netflix. So after they leave the cinema, they'll be streaming on Netflix for like a year. And that includes like future Spider-Man films, which is a pretty big deal. So everyone's obviously Disney's been doing the thing where they release films on Disney Plus, like Soul and Luca, and then their other films end up on Disney Plus after a theatrical run. And it seems like Apple is joining in the fray. They seem to be happy with how many people want films, and they're going to be getting more of them out the door. I think it's a good sign because, like, Apple only has, like, now they have what, like 50 TV shows? They only have 15 movies, right? If you're a movie fan and you want to enjoy Apple's content, you can get through the 50 movies very quickly. So if they could up it so that they have, you know, one or two movies a month coming out on the service, it makes it more of like, it gives it more stickiness so that people come back and bang back. Like, they don't need 100 movies a year like Netflix, but the better equilibrium is clearly higher than 10 movies a year. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. As we get on the other side of this pandemic, I wonder, I guess I could see Apple, it being more routine that you see a movie in theaters that, you know, begins with Apple's logo on it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Like, why not? Right. Like, I mean, you are one of the few people who've actually seen an Apple original film in a theater. Uh-huh. You saw The Banker last year, uh-huh. Right?
Yeah, right.
That was like a week before everything shut down. Is that right?
When I left the theater, it closed. No joke.
You quite literally skated under the wire.
So. Yeah.
Apple can show a film in a theater. A, they want to show it in theaters anyway because they want to get eligibility for awards. So they always show most of their films in theaters, which, some description.
Which
so,
was waived this year, but maybe won't be in the future. But also, I think it's nice to be in a theater.
Yeah, so if they start like spending, you know, hundreds of millions on films, which they're already doing, like the Killer of the Flower Moon, the Martin Scorsese project, that's like $200 million. The Will Smith film that was going to be filmed in Georgia, but now isn't. That's Emancipation. That's like a $125 million project. Like, they're, you know, they've got hundreds of millions on the lines for some of these big blockbuster films. Why not show them in cinemas for 2 months, get the ticket revenue from showing them in films, and then put them on Apple TV Plus after? Like, it's just a way for them to actually recoup some of the financial investment. And you probably get word of mouth marketing from people actually seeing it in the cinema and then being like, oh, I want to watch it again. Okay, it's on TV Plus, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then one more shout out. For Mankind finished last week. Mm-hmm. I know Zach has watched the finale like a month ago at this point because he did the review.
Oh my gosh.
Everything.
It's been longer than that. Yeah.
Yeah. Like 3 months ago or something.
Yeah. No, but I have been listening to every episode of the For All Mankind podcast that Apple did. Mm-hmm. And then also Jason Snell did his own as well. which I enjoyed his more because it's a recap episode of like, you know, here's what we thought about the episode versus like, yeah, here's some supplemental content for it. But both were good. I mean, only the cast could do what they did in their podcast. You know, and you know, as some actors involved in the show, season one and two are not going to come back in season three, it was like really, interesting to listen to them talk about, yeah, we don't have a job in terms of this show. And then other characters saying, yeah, we're working on season three, but we don't know what's going to happen beyond that because of the way that this show, you know, time jumps. So.
Yeah, well, I watched the finale on Friday. I loved it. I thought it was great.
Yeah, yeah. I think in my review, I feel like it held up well because I did just a really high level season two review after watching, you know, the screeners, and I felt like, you know, I think the comment I made to you is so much of what you see in the trailers is the last two episodes, mm-hmm. you know, and the last two episodes feel kind of cinematic, and that there's a whole lot going on. But they do tie up all the different stories that they've been telling, and don't leave you hanging or anything. So it's
yeah. Good. I mean, I wish more of the whole season was like the last two episodes, you know, like I don't mind all the drama stuff, but mm-hmm. I feel like the balance could be slightly more weighted in terms of some action as well. And yeah. I don't want to give away spoilers because it's, you know, the show only just finished last week, so maybe some people haven't caught up yet, but mm-hmm. you should definitely watch it if you haven't seen it.
I know some of our colleagues named Chance have just started watching the show in general and really like
beginning.
It. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's been getting good reviews. Like, people in the finale, you know, Vox Media, Rolling Stone, like Alan Sepinwall, who writes for Rolling Stone, he was one of the critics that like dissed on For All Mankind when it first came out in, you know, November 2019. He was like, this show's just glossy affair, it's not very good, blah 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 blah. And then he's been like converted because he was like, the For All Mankind season two finale, it's one of the best things I've ever seen, it's fantastic, everybody should be watching For All Mankind, right? Like he clearly, you know, got on the bandwagon after the mm-hmm. He didn't like the first few episodes, but clearly he got, you know, he got on board. So I think the finale, the action-packed finale, has definitely helped just like widen the word of mouth marketing for the show as well. Like, a lot of people glommed onto it from that. The season I enjoyed, apart from, I'd say, one storyline involving a certain woman and a certain man, which I won't name names because of spoilers, but apart from that, I thought the whole thing was pretty great. So there you go. If you haven't seen For All Mankind, go and watch it.
I think that scenario was very realistic, and everyone was lost on it. Like from my friends and seeing reactions, it was like, wait, where is this show going? This is going off the rails now. But just from my personal experience in life, that scenario was very, very real. There, so much of it was just like raw, like, you know, nothing that you plan for or want to happen, but it's just like, you know, so, it hits differently, I guess, depending on life experiences, but, it definitely was weird in the show. But yeah, the payoff, I can't wait for the third season. And then, you know, Ronald Moore, he's, you know this very well. He's got an overall deal now with Disney, right? Mm-hmm. And so I was on a press call a couple of weeks ago, and he was asked about that. You know, what's going to change now that you I think he had the deal before with Sony, then he did the Apple TV thing for these first two seasons. Apple is out, they're obviously doing season three, but from what it sounded like, he really is going to just be, you know, involved in as far as he has been, that they've got the big story laid out, you know, from his mind for the most part, and they're going to run with that, but that he won't be as involved as he is, as he has been for season one and season two because of the Disney package. You know, I think the way he put it was that he'll be creating new shows, and it takes a lot of energy to create new shows.
Yeah, so the day-to-day running of For All Mankind will be handled by different people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But hopefully the quality of it sustains itself. Like, as always, Ron Moore was obviously the big name on the top of the show, but, you know, the show isn't written by one person.
Right, he has a couple of co-creators and co-producer, and a co-producer, so, yep.
Okie dokie. Today slash tomorrow, whatever
slash
whatever
yesterday
way
or last week,
the timeline.
Or last year.
Yeah.
That's the best pop talk ever.
Pre-orders for the new Apple TV 4K and the Siri remote, the iMac with M1 and the iPad Pro with M1. What are you buying, if anything?
Okay, so there's Apple TV 4K, there's the iMac, there's the iPad. You know, my feelings on the iPad Pro, really on the iPad in general, is the hardware is amazing. I cannot wait until they make software that's made for the iPad. the Apple TV 4K. I'll have one of these eventually, but like the AirTags, I'm not going out to order it. But I mean, really, the Apple TV 4K, if you have an Apple TV 4K, is lackluster. Like the big story there is what's how the remote has changed. And in my experience, I don't even use the remote that much. I use the iPhone control center tile.
Is that because the physical remote's bad though?
No, it's because the iPhone's always in my hand because I'm addicted to it. But I will have one. I will, you know, buy one eventually. Just not yet.
Yeah.
And then
you buy a full pack tomorrow.
Yeah, right. And then the iMac. I really do want one. I'm not gonna pre-order one. The reason is you know, I've got the M1 MacBook Air. This iMac is what I've been thinking. It's like, I love the color. I think the design's very interesting, very neat. But you know, right now I'm doing everything on the MacBook Air. I don't, you know, I think what will happen, like my order of operations will be, I do house shopping for the next few months to a year. And then I start thinking about a home office again. And until then, I just live on the MacBook Air. And why rush having a desktop that is exactly like the MacBook Air? You know, because by the time I think I get ready to purchase, we'll have these iMacs plus the higher end iMacs.
Yep.
Plus maybe even a display. And so there's no reason to rush it for me. But the orange one is my go-to pick. Although the green one, I think, is my number two since I've been looking at them.
Yeah, like if you're already using a MacBook Air with M1, just carry on with that, and at least see what they're going to ship in the end of the year with, like, the higher end iMac Pro or MacBook Pro, et cetera. Like,
yeah, and it's less about choose. Yeah, and it's less about like waiting. What else could they do with the Apple Silicon chip? But it's more about timing of just okay, when I'll actually be ready to have a desktop, you know, that I have a place for and everything. Because right now the MacBook Air is great for me. So I'm podcasting from my living room couch and my table, you know, so it works for me for right now.
Yep. I'm personally not interested in an iMac, not because I don't think they're cool, just because I don't want a desktop computer. So I'm not ordering an iMac. I'm certainly not ordering an iPad Pro, but I am, of course, getting the new Apple TV 4K with the new Siri remote. I've been waiting so long for an Apple TV update. I'm currently sitting on Apple TV HDs, so I don't feel bad about getting a 4K in the house.
Sure. Yeah.
I still think the Apple TV is too expensive, but hey-ho, I'm going to buy it anyway.
Yeah.
Maybe I would only be buying the remote, right? But that's $60. I'm like, well, let's just get a box.
You're halfway. You're like, you're good way there.
Yeah, like especially as I don't have a single Apple TV 4K at the moment, so the HDs are starting to get a bit old, right? Like,
well, one of the Apple performance TV HDs,
the $1 one I got from the developer program like 6 years ago. So
that's true.
I'm getting Apple TV 4K with the new Siri remote.
So. Yeah, and the performance, I mean, you should notice the performance difference alone, even if you were just to go to last 3 years, 10K, 4K TV.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Last thing I'll say is anyone who's looking at the new iPad Pro, if you're torn on the 11 versus 12.9 inch and you're not against having the bigger screen, you know, I would be really hesitant to get the 11 inch this year because of the display change type on the 12.9 inch, you know, only being there. It sounds really good. And obviously we haven't seen them yet, but from what it sounds like, I think there's no way I would buy this year's 11 inch iPad Pro, even with the M1 chip in it and, Thunderbolt. You know, I really think the M1 chip is as gradual as you'd get from having the iPad upgrade every year. You know, it's just that now the chip is fast enough to be in Max. And we know the software story, of course, but, that's the most compelling thing to me is the new display type, because that's the biggest thing about the iPad is it's a big screen. And if you can have, you know, if you're spending that much money, really consider, you know, getting the bigger iPad for the screen type, or, you know, if you're opposed to it, maybe wait until the 11 inch gets that same screen type.
I 100% concur. That display is really impressive. So if you're going to buy one, try and stretch your money and get the 12.9.
Yep. Yep. Or buy an older iPad that you already could have bought, you know, the 2011 or 2020 iPad 11 inch. But the 12.9 inch, I would encourage you to look at if you're on the fence about those two things.
And, Apple says, still says that you pre-order tomorrow and they'll be shipping in the second half of May. John Prosser, some other sources, some other retailers all seem to be indicating that all of these products, so the Apple TV, the iMac, and the Apple Pro, will be launching in stores, releasing, shipping, whatever you want to call it, on May 21st.
Which is the, it is the second half. It's also the third quarter of the month.
It's the second half of the second half.
Well, no, it's the first half of the second half.
I guess it's the first half of the second half.
Yeah. Now you owe me an iMac for that mistake.
But anyways, all right, as always, we got a bit of a wait. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. As always, that is the Happy Hour podcast for the week. You can email us at happyhour@95mac.com. You can unfollow Benjamin on Twitter at
BZMAA.
Cool. And you can follow me on Twitter. That was slick. You can follow me on Twitter at ApolloZach, or you can go to ApolloZach.com and see all my work everywhere. And with that being said, we will be back next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.